Welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name's Ed Piskor.
I'm Jim Rugg.
And Jim, we had the channel for 2 years. It's January, 12 months in a year, 12 issues in Watchmen. An issue a month. How about that?
Sounds like a plan, Ed.
What you got?
I have a Patreon. Patreon.com/Jim Rugg. I'm showing Street Angel here because I serialized a lot of this work on there. A lot of my out-of-print zines and mini-comics and things are available on there. Lots of art, lots of process. Patreon.com/Jim Rugg.
Patreon.com/Ed Piskor is where I'm serializing my current comics project, Red Room. Murder on the Dark Web for fun and profit. You could see I'm working on some logo treatments. None of those made the cut. This image might show up on the cover because the thing's going to hit print sometime this year. But right now, for the early adopters, they could go on the Patreon. There are two stories up there completely. Murder on the Dark Web for fun and profit, Jimmy. And this is some of the murder stuff that's happening, man. $3 gets you the archive, and I put up new strips every Tuesday. Now, Jim, here's the task that we have at hand, because there's been so much writing and pontificating about the Watchmen graphic novel. Right now, we're going to agree to cleanse our minds of all of that previous nonsense that we've read from what I call Wackademics. Look at this comic with a clean slate and just see how it stacks up as a reading experience as best we can. All right, man, now that we used our Men in Black little flashlight gimmicks, you ready to read some comics?
I am, and before we open this one, because I want to talk about that cover a little bit,
yes.
I wanted to just hold this under it. Ed, this is your trade paperback of Watchmen. I have a similar trade paperback. That's how I first read Watchmen, probably in the early 90s or so. Probably the same Walden Books purchase for me, the same as Dark Knight Returns. This was a book that I had heard a lot about.
Third printing, not bad.
Yeah, pretty good. Wonder how many printings they're on at this point.
Yeah.
But it was known at that point. It had come out. It was considered sort of a high mark of superhero stories. I am not somebody that's going to sit here and be like, this is the best comic of all time. I enjoy it, but most of my admiration lies in the craft, which mm-hmm. we will be getting into. And again, starts with the cover. Just unique. You know, you mentioned... Tell me about your experience finding this book and picking it up and your reaction.
Yeah, so you hear all sorts of interviews mentioning Watchmen, read articles. Watchmen is this crown jewel, this great pinnacle of comics. Found that trade paperback at the flea market, $3. Great, best $3 I ever spent. And I read it, and it was like okay. Like I dug it. There wasn't anything I disliked about it, but was my mind blown? Not really. As I got older, I started to appreciate the craft of it further and further. The storytelling mechanics, the things that were done that were unique to comics. I increased my education on with creators like Kurtzman and Eisner, and sort of understood the possibilities of what could happen in a comic. And I took a lot of this, the stuff that happened in here, for granted, and was able to reread it with fresh eyes. But I check it out like once a year probably.
One of the things that struck me right away is the weirdness of it.
Sure.
It was really out of the ordinary for the comics that I was reading, which were mostly the Marvel DC stuff off the spinner rack and then into Image. You know, it's in that window, but that stuff was sort of like toys. You know, it was action figures. It was colorful and selling this stuff. This is those tertiary colors, and you look at that cover, and that is not like an Amazing Spider-Man cover. That is a weird cover. Like, I want a hero. Show me some guy with a bunch of muscles and a cool costume, and instead it's a smiley face button. It's a logo down the side that's in some kind of font that looks cold. It just felt totally different than, like, the language I was used to with comics. And then reading it, it feels like this whole big world of, like, I don't know any of these characters, and yet they're all developed. They have history, generations of characters that come before them. So it was kind of this unusual reading experience for all those reasons, where it was just like, comics history, like, what is this? Felt weird. You know, it still feels a little bit weird. And I think that's part of what makes it iconic, is those weird elements, is the parts that break from all the stuff I was finding on the spinner racks. And as you said, 1986, you know, that's even earlier than I got it. It would have been even more alien on, you know, next to the whatever Marvel was, new universe. You know what I mean?
Star brand?
Yes.
For all of the stuff that's unique to comics that that they bring to the table here, it's interesting that the only time that captions are used are for like the Rorschach journals. And Moore was doing Swamp Thing at the time, using very florid purple prose in his captioning, but he divorces himself from that here and just kind of like lets the visual do a lot of the talking, which is atypical for almost every other comic he's made.
I loved how the covers are like the first panels.
Yeah.
That's really neat to me, and still remains something I like about this series.
For sure, man. And this is one of those issues that's like the bookend issue that kind of like ends similarly to the way it begins and starts this, right off, man.
You know, influence of Watchmen, of course, is the Dark Age of comics. This is kind of the beginning of that, and it's because everybody copies this.
Right.
And it starts with Rorschach, right? Like, he's such a... I don't even know what the word is. You know, nihilistic, misanthropic, you know, whatever you want to apply to him. He is certainly that dark, grim, gritty, brooding, doesn't like his fellow man, that kind of thing. Not a lot of sympathy coming out of Rorschach, for certainly not for criminals or anybody that does evil. The Ditko-esque qualities, you know, Rorschach is like the Question,
yeah.
You know, the Charlton hero. And it is essentially that everybody is fallen. Everybody's a sinner. Everybody's weak. Everybody does wrongs. It's a really bleak outlook on humanity, and that is our opening voice.
Yes, and it's almost Shakespearean. Dog carcass and alley, like burst stomach, blah blah blah. All that's Shakespearean. Like, that's been transcribed in movies, those motion comics. Alan Moore has read those statements in different contexts, in documentaries and stuff. Famous first lines of a comic: "Call me Ishmael." And here goes Higgins, man, showing off with the color, giving us that little flashback sequence of our intruder beating up our guy. And the character's design's perfect, right? It's like this beefy old dude. It's pick a wrestler, Harley Race.
Yes,
you know, perfect. Like some old retired guy. You could tell that he's somebody. He's got those Polly Walnuts wings in his hair, man. So that's a good like Reed Richards kind of analog. His face saw some battle damage. I'm curious how that happened.
Yeah, ugly mug, lots of questions in there. Wearing the pin that we saw on the cover. Gets you right away, and also gets you with sort of the formal comic elements of this. That 9-panel grid structure that runs throughout and is... It creates rhythm, it's claustrophobic, it gets you into that world. Like when we talked about Stray Bullets, and you repeat that grid, and pretty soon all you see are the contents of those panels because you're just adjusted to that size. Watchmen does all that. Very dense book.
I think probably one of the only times that in the comic where we see the sort of panel continue downward this way. I don't even think there are very many where it connects with the very adjacent panel in this book.
That top panel is also part of the same perspective grid.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that's really neat. And we'll see some interesting variations of the 9-panel grid and what they do, even in this first issue. I love that. I had not noticed that was all a consistent background, so that's really cool and kind of cool to see it here.
First time reading this, you see this guy and you saw him on that first page. I was suspicious the very first time I read this, man, of this dude. When you see him a couple of times, the design is also a little too interesting.
That's a good call. I did not make that connection, but I do think it's interesting. I mean, we're not spoiling anything, right, to say who that is.
Right, it's Rorschach.
So I think it's an interesting piece because this... cool vigilante. I mean, it's, you know, Batman is that too,
right? Yeah,
just he's violent and whatever, but he's cool and he's desirable, he's attractive. That's often the case with these characters, intentionally or not. Rorschach is very unattractive outside of his costume.
This is one of those real good pieces too, because these guys are talking about Rorschach as they're leaving, and then dude goes, "What's the matter?" "Oh, nothing, just a shiver, must be getting cold," right as they walk by really the guy.
Good. Yeah, I love this page. Here's our wordless page.
Incredible sequence.
Full moon zine, couple panels that I can put into my full moon zine, but it's a great sequence. It's a great visuals. And again, I'm in awe of the visuals. Like the craft that we're going to see, that two two-thirds page splash, just stunning. And all of the heroes are going to get that sort of treatment, these big characters, where we bend the grid or we make it six panels, and we do it in some creative ways.
I just realized, man, this is an allusion to issue two. It's a woman, like, kind of with blood on the stomach. That's kind of calling out the pregnant lady that isn't gonna be long for this world once she cuts up his jibs in Vietnam.
You mentioned Higgins on the flashback stuff, all those pink and magenta panels. I pointed out here with the broken window. I love how the buildings are blue where the glass is intact, and then we get to see the lit up windows where the glass is busted.
The stuff that Gibbons does here too with lighting, like laying the flashlight down so that it's facing him, and really it well creates done. Noirish uplighting, and it's not like genius. In the movies like Cagney where they just do that for effect and there's nothing in the room to give you that light. He's creating it right there. That's really nice.
And you see it in the black ink shadows that are cast. Yeah. So that's Gibbons establishing it. And then you see it in the colors that Higgins putting on. Man, that's the team working together. And of course, you know, you extend that to Alan Moore, but this is really one of those few assembly line comics where the team is just phenomenally in sync with each other.
And there it is, man. He finds a sadomasochism mask, the most unfunny mask that somebody called the comedian could possibly wear.
Yeah, a little irony in the comedian's gimmick.
Lays it out.
I love the layout panel. Like, he can't just look at the closet and be like, oh, comedian's costume. He has to lay it out on the ground and be like,
Here we have Alan Moore transition. Looking at the Minutemen photo, and then, boom, let's go to Hollis Mason's house. Show that same photo.
Yeah, these are the two night owls, first and second generation. At this point, everybody's retired, and now they just get together. They tell stories. They enjoy one another's company.
Once again, great character design, because this old Hollis Mason, you could tell he was somebody.
Yeah, Silver Fox, almost Gil Kane-esque or something. The way I picture Gil Kane in my mind.
And then Dan Dreiberg, kind of dumpy. You know, a little wide, definite middle-aged guy that might have some titties.
Very good character design for him. Says a lot about him. You know, lower self-confidence, doesn't seem to have the drive that, you know, Rorschach has, for example.
Here's an interesting kind of, like, subdued piece. When you, I mean, sure, we see the busted lock, but it's not, that's not given to us. You know what I mean? Like, it's the same color as everything else. It's not orange or pointing us there. It's actually kind of giving some respect to the reader. You'll see that busted lock.
I have a question for you regarding that. Where's the doorknob? Is that like some kind of button access door thing? That struck me as being strange.
Let's
considering how detailed everything of this book is.
Let's keep a look at doors moving forward, because we have the electric car, and this is a piece. You know what I was thinking upon this reread? Alan Moore, before Watchmen, like, he was quoted in house ads for Love and Rockets, and he's a big mark for Jaime and Gilbert's work. And Gilbert Hernandez Palomar comes from that great sort of Latin American tradition of magical realism, where, you know, you have this real world, but you have a couple of things, couple of elements that, that, you know, are weird or magical. This comic is a piece of magical realism with Dr. Manhattan. It's like everything's played for straight except that one thing. But that one guy affects a lot, creates a lithium to make the electric cars go. And maybe there's some weird door gimmick. But I don't know. Yeah, that is weird.
Gibbons' art is so matter-of-fact and straightforward. You know, his compositions, they're beautiful. You know, Dan standing in the middle of the page, in the middle of the panel, silhouetted, or looking through the doors. Like, it just reads so clearly. If the guy's a little overweight, it's very obvious in the drawings. I don't think that can be, the importance of that can be overstated. I don't know how many cartoonists, especially guys working in that monthly assembly line, I don't know how many would be capable of producing a work like this.
I agree. He comes from like a kind of a Kurt Swan kind of cleanness.
Yeah.
But every line, it's about communication. And it should be noted, he letters this thing too. So those word balloon placements and seeing this October calendar, I guess pretty much the whole story takes place in the month of October, if I'm not mistaken. We'll keep our eye on that. But yeah, like every line is communicating story here. The sugar cubes, like they're kind of like an ongoing piece, a runner.
Yeah, so bizarre. You know what, go back one page. So here he breaks the eight panels. It's still a nine-panel grid, but he makes it eight panels by combining them. But they work. It still works. You know, like that's still a composition that's incredible and even mirrors the entrance on the previous page. It's spectacular, these panel layouts.
Yeah, agreed. And keep in mind, he thumbnailed these things, I think, eight pages per one piece of computer paper. So he drew these things very, very small. Blew them up, and we had the opportunity to ask him, man, did you lightbox them shits, man? Because they are so close. He's like, nah, I just eyeballed it, flexing on us.
Yeah. All of the background stuff, too, is really impressive to me, the level of detail and clarity. Like, I was admiring the kitchen, you know, and it has, like, a backsplash and stuff, and it's like,
and
wow.
And there's continuity to it. Yeah. Like, when you revisit that kitchen, it's all going to have the same stuff. When you revisit this little owl lair or whatever, it's going to retain all the same geography.
Love this owl lair, too. Every part of this tour that we're going on is just beautiful. This is, I think there's more variation in issue one than later issues in terms of, like, four panels instead of three.
That's the only time, I think. It
happened already. It happened on the intro page.
Ah, dig.
There's your two-page splash intro for Night Owl and Dan, and the contrast between the heroic versus where he is today. Huge contrast.
Says a lot, man. Says a lot. He's a drip.
Yeah. And Rorschach just kind of, his presence reminds him of the compromise and giving up as the hero. How about that for beautiful color?
Oh, yeah, for
sure.
Sun
coming up.
We have the obligatory superhero rooftop sequence, right? But it's a sequence like Rorschach is filled with so much self-deception. You know, he's the only guy. Below him is all the scum and villainy and gross people.
Yeah, literally above it all. And I make a mistake, that's dusk, not dawn. But I love that color palette. Like, he's just waiting for the darkness is when he makes sense. And he's going to get some answers about the comedian. And if anybody knows anything, goes to Happy Harry's. I love the way he looks in all of these. It's so menacing. You know, when you see him in a distance in there, it is just like, that is a great face design, mask design for him. I'm surprised there's no fight back. So he grabs a guy who's giving him some smart ass in the crowd that makes a remark, grabs him, starts torturing him for information. Nobody does anything. Rorschach does not look that intimidating. It's a scary mask, but he's not a big dude. I don't see a gun. Like, this is a bar full of toughs.
It's history. Like,
I guess
even the guy sitting at the table was like, oh, I'm gonna, like, yo, watch your mouth, man. The bartender is like, oh, Rorschach. Like, this is establishing that Rorschach is a bad motherfucker, man.
I guess so. Even the guy whose finger's getting broke, though, doesn't try anything. He's like, just keep breaking my fingers, man. I'm not going to take a swing at you. I'm not going to jerk away.
This guy right here, like, I always think about it. It looks like an Otomo drawing, you know? It looks like a dude straight out of Neo Tokyo.
It's one of the odder panels in this whole Watchmen book. It's placed in the center of the page. It mirrors Rorschach. It doesn't mirror Rorschach. It parallels Rorschach from the previous panel. It's an odd one.
Yeah.
That one confuses me a little bit.
Let's go to Veidt Industries, man. Introduce Adrian Veidt to the gimmick.
The world's smartest man.
Yes. And he monetizes himself.
This is really great because Rorschach basically calls him a prostitute or a whore, and he calls Rorschach a Nazi. And I don't know if either one of them is wrong.
Right.
Rorschach's not a likable guy. He's cast in that role as being the Punisher or something, but he's a very unlikable character. It's the Cold War era, and we're facing nuclear annihilation, a war between the USA and USSR, and the smartest man alive is going to try to stop it through this devious plot of having creating an alien life that unifies the Earth.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, of course.
He's also the guy behind the mask killer gimmick, the killer of the comedian. Why kill the comedian? Why have any part of Watchmen? We just have a smart guy who's trying to convince the world that aliens exist and are a threat. there's no reason for this story to exist. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think, like, when he's getting all those people, all the creatives and stuff, putting them on the island, I think the idea is, like, take out the people who are, who pose the biggest threat. And, like, the comedian poses a big, like, a threat to him. Dr. Manhattan poses a threat to his plan. Rorschach poses a threat to the plan. So just get those guys the hell out of there so that you could keep going with your thing.
I see no evidence that they get connected to him without the death of the comedian.
That who gets connected?
Rorschach, Manhattan. Manhattan doesn't seem to care at all. And Rorschach only seems to care because of the comedian's death.
Yeah, probably should have took Rorschach out first.
Or not at all. Let comedians sit in this TV, watching TV and drinking beers at home. Comedian's not going to care either. Bunch of artist intellectuals are missing. Comedian's not going to care about that.
Yeah, I
think the whole plot is nonsensical for that reason.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Smartest man, I'm suggesting the smartest man on earth is not as smart as he thinks he is.
But are you suggesting that the smartest man on earth is Jim Rugg?
I found a hole in his plan. That's all I'm saying.
Let's go. Military base.
Yes, I love this sequence. Love the color, love the signage, love it all. This is really fun.
Yeah, good kind of sneaking mm-hmm. scenario.
Yep. Couple of them. You know, we watch him go the whole way through this process. Again, tip my hat to Dave Gibbons for, like, drawing this kind of stuff. It's the equivalent of a chase scene, sneaking into a complex facility. And then I love it. Once he actually gets in there, you get a blue sliver of light. And then open the door, and it just feels like you're being lit by that. Yes, that's there the sound is, effect. And his two-thirds page splash, those six panels are the stacked vertical. Love it. I am madly in love with that compositional choice.
When he draws Dr. Manhattan, he is just showing off that he knows where every muscle is supposed to go and how many heads tall a dude should be and how far back the ears are from the eyes. Like, every illustration of Dr. Manhattan is a very well-drawn image of a nude, muscular human figure.
That's true. Yeah, beautiful stuff. And Sally Jupiter, Dr. Manhattan's companion, we see her as well. Introduction of both of them.
Yes.
Manhattan is a really good design. Such a creepy look. Even the lines, like the shade lines that are just those parallel lines, it still stands out.
Yeah.
Good choices.
Dave Gibbons does some things, too, with the proportionality of his characters looks different here than it does in any of his other comics. Like, it's small head, very long, lanky bodies. His other comics don't really, the characters really don't look that way. So he's making this conscious choice of doing that. And one of the things I'm going to make note of as we read in the future, because it's not something I thought of, it just sort of came to mind now, like, are these lanky characters indicative of, like, the superhero characters?
That's what I was wondering. Yeah,
and when we start to see, you know, Joe Average on the street, if they're more squat and normal sized.
Look at that, to have to draw all those parts, like he's expanded this piece with his mind or whatever.
Yeah, just setting up that, like, watchmaker scenario that's going to come later. Establishing all these characters, we get all their points of view. He clearly doesn't give a fuck. This girl is kind of like a product of nepotism, superhero nepotism.
I always love that panel of Rorschach walking by the graffiti and everything.
Yeah.
It feels like a very iconic one. You can see a little bit of Who Watches the Watchmen graffiti, like up on the top right side.
Kristallnacht. But it's all comic book lettering.
That's the thing I love, you know, as a fan of lettering. All the found letter. I mean, Gibbons doing all of it. You know, it's not. Sometimes I'll see sound effects in a comic and wonder, is that the letter or the artist? Here, you just know. If you see it, that's Dave Gibbons.
Yeah, man.
And there's so much of that throughout that just builds this world.
And this world includes a President Richard Nixon who's on, like, his third or fourth term or something.
And this is Sally Jupiter and Dan Night Owl going out and connecting a little bit. Her getting some human contact. Dr. Manhattan's pretty far removed from human at this point.
Yeah. Talking about the good old days, man. Talking about the plunging neckline of her costume. And Dan Driver's, oh, yeah, yeah, that was kind of over the top. She's like, you know, 80s feminist. Hear me roar.
And Gallo's humor as they trade old stories, and they talk about some guy who just wanted to be around superheroes and would fake like he was a criminal and have like asthma attacks. He was so excited. And she says, whatever happened to him? He tried it with Rorschach and he dropped him down an elevator shaft. And they both laugh and then are like, man, that's not funny.
What do you expect, man? Comedian is dead.
And wrap it up with a Bob Dylan quote. It's
and it, you know, like it ends the way it started, semi close up on that smiley face as we pull back into you know, the stratosphere.
Yeah, it's quite an achievement, quite an accomplishment, hell of a first issue setup.
You know, gotta build a world, man, to get the richness of these characters and to have certain things pay off in issue 7 that we see set up here. Rorschach looking at the people in the building.
Part of the reason I mentioned that plot device is that mask killer. It's the same kind of thing that's in The Incredibles, Pixar's movie. And it made me wonder, like, the mask killer concept, does that originate in Watchmen, or is that a reference to some older story? And I don't know the answer to that. I can't point at an older one and say, oh, yeah, this is common or has been done before.
Right.
But certainly it's been done since. And then this under the hood is part of building that world as well. This is Hollis Mason's autobiography, and it's kind of a strange story. It starts out, and it's a little bit of Alan Moore, like, how to write. So the very beginning, Mason's like, I don't know exactly how to start a story. Someone told me start with the saddest story you know, and then after that, it's only up from there. I don't know if that's a good advice or not, but that's kind of my thinking reading this, is you get a little insight into Alan Moore's thought process. And his saddest story is about a guy who kills himself in a garage after, his wife leaves him and stuff. So a little bit sad. I don't know if it's the saddest story, but, you know, it's this ancillary material runs through the back of all of these Watchmen books. And it's one more piece that makes this comic feel very different, especially at the time whenever I started reading this and picking these up, where it's like, what is this part? You know, and you're reading it, and it was just a different comic book experience.
For sure. Like, you read it a couple times and you realize, like, so much more work was done behind the scenes than we respect. And this is, like, our closest kind of insight into some of that back end work that was done before we started to get all of these companion books and interviews coming out and stuff. You could tell that that's the old dude that Dan Dreiberg was talking to. You know what I mean? Like, these are simple line drawings, but the proportions of them and everything that Dave Gibbons puts down on paper, there's no mistaking who that is.
Yeah, it's a remarkable project. And this kind of extra material, you know, like I mentioned when I got hold of this, it felt like there was a whole history of these characters, a whole world, previous generations, not by accident. You know, I mean, that's what that excerpts from a biography of a very distant supporting character. It is a world that these guys are putting together, which was just new. You know, this is a time whenever comics, definitely superhero comics, are still aimed at 8-year-old readers, 9-year-old readers.
Right.
And what's going on with Watchmen, it was a whole different vision for it. I think that work that is really iconic and paradigm shifting suffers because everything after it is influenced by it to some degree.
Right.
So if you show up now, 25 years later, 30, 35 years later, and you're reading this, everything you've read in comics, is, well, at least Marvel DC kind of comics for decades, touches Watchmen. So you've been exposed to Watchmen even if you've never read it, and I think that that can hurt the original work's impact.
Happens a lot. Movies,
yeah,
novels.
Pulp Fiction, I think, really suffered from that. It felt like every indie genre movie after it in the 90s referenced it in some way or the other. So I think that that's something that Watchmen has to overcome in, you know, with audiences, but it's interesting to see how it has held up. You know, like, it has been a perennial book. It has spawned TV shows, movies, sequels, you know, all of this stuff. There aren't that many properties in comics over the last 40 years that can say that.
That's a good place to leave it, Jimmy, until next month when we do chapter 2. K-favors, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel, hit the bell. We'll notify you when new vids are available. What you got, Jim?
Subscribe to my Patreon at patreon.com/JimRugg to find my comics, original art scans, behind-the-scenes process stuff, PDFs of old zines, you name it, you can find it there. Patreon.com/JimRugg.
Patreon.com/EdPiskor is where I'm serializing first looks at the Red Room comic. 2 stories are up there completely right now. 3 books get you the archive. New strips every Tuesday.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video to keep up with everything we have going on. You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
Give one more set of Martian orders, Jimmy. We'll be on our way.
Read more comics.
M-O-O-R-E.